Okay, what's the number one reason you should try Instacart? Shopping over 1.5 million unique products from over 1,000 retailers and get everything delivered right to your door in as fast as 1 hour, all in one app. So you can spend more time with the ones who matter most. Visit instacart.com to get free delivery on your first three orders. Offer valid for a limited time. $10 minimum per order. Additional terms apply.
Radio. Keith Smith does a tremendous job covering the entire NBA for the Front Office Show. And also, you could check out the Celtics blog as well. Keith, Zach Gelpier, appreciate the time. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me.
Well, thanks so much for coming on. I loved your tweets yesterday pointing out how much of an incentive it is for Jaylen Brown to stay in Boston. I know that that's always known, but when you put the numbers, 5 years, $290.3 million compared to four, a $184.5 million if he goes somewhere else. I just don't see a way this offseason where Jaylen Brown goes, yeah, I'm going to pass on that money. I no longer want to be a part of the Boston Celtics.
Yeah, he would be the second player to pass up a supermax. The first was Kawhi Leonard, and we all know Kawhi does things very differently than anybody else really kind of ever has. In the NBA, he kind of operates on his own timelines and in his own way. And, you know, that's, we haven't seen anybody else turn it down because the attitude, like it or not, in the NBA now is, all right, you know what? I'll take the money, and if I don't like the way things are going a year or two in, I'll ask for a trade then. That's just kind of how the league works now.
Do you think people are just too caught up in the moment? I think people forget how young Tatum and Brown are, and we've seen them in so many big games for so many years, and you think by now they would have a championship. Is that why you think there's been a lot of that discussion in the last 24, 48 hours?
I think there's a portion of getting caught up in the moment, but I think there's also, this was year kind of six of this core group together for the most part of Brown, Tatum, Marcus Smart, Al Horford, and then, you know, a couple of those other guys. Rob Williams has been there for a little while now too. And that's what I think has people saying, yeah, we haven't broken through yet, right? We got to the finals once, but haven't gotten all the way there. And I think now what's happening is it turns into a conversation of, are we ever going to do it, right? That becomes the fans' number one question. And then you start to look at, I think people are just educated enough to understand that the super tax is coming in the new CBA, and that's going to make it really, really restrictive to build out a team. And I think people are looking at that saying, you know what? This may not, go exactly the way we want it to.
Keith Smith here with us. When you look at Jaylen Brown in that game seven, the turnovers are horrible. He couldn't go to his left. How does he find a way to overcome that in the foreseeable future? Because it's the same issue the last few years with him.
Yeah, you got to tighten up the handle, right? That's the only real way to get there. Tighten up the handle, get a little bit better running pick and roll so you're a lot more confident with the ball in your hands, and just kind of, you know, make it work that way, because that's got to be a skill that you have. Right now, Jaylen Brown is primarily a scorer who can do some playmaking, but he's a guy, when he gets the ball in his hands, he's looking to score, and that's not a bad thing, right? The league still needs guys who can score, and he does it very well and pretty efficiently. So I think what happens, though, is when you get into the playoffs, especially in a game like that, Game 7, where it's clear Jason Tatum was hurting, he wasn't able to do his normal thing, that allowed the Heat to really load to the ball, focus on Jaylen Brown, and he just wasn't up to the moment. So that's going to be something he's going to have to kind of own, go back into the lab this offseason, and come back a better player next year.
How much of this season is on Joe Mazzulla from the coaching standpoint?
I mean, some of it, right? It's hard because, you know, there's a huge amount of criticism that's being laid on him and the Celtics. And I get it. It's a disappointing season because they lost to the 8th seed, and we all thought they were a better team than they were a year ago, and they were in the finals. But to me, there's got to be a little bit of perspective in there. They were one of the final four teams playing. They did get all the way back from a 3-0 deficit. And I think, you know, for me, part of that is, all right, coach, how do you get them ready to play in the early games, right? If you hadn't, you know, kind of thrown away a couple of those early games, you win the series in probably six and maybe even five, and you're in the finals right now against the Nuggets. And instead, they threw away a couple of those early games and fell apart. So that's going to be something he's got to come back with. I think, you know, people would love to see him come back with an offense that's not so three-point heavy, because that's been a major challenge for them, and something that just people haven't really fully bought into, with this team and this personnel. So those are things that they're going to have to figure out and try to get better with.
The other thing, too, Keith Smith, is if people are going to say get rid of Joe Mazzulla, who are you bringing in? Like, Doc Rivers is not, coming on back to Boston. And at this point, kind of the luster is worn off on Doc Rivers. If you're going to tell me Monty Williams, like, his team's the last 2 years failed in the big moments as well. So I don't see the coach out there that's like, okay, I have to have right now to shove Joe Mazzulla out the door.
Yeah, that's the fan stuff that, you know, times when it's fire the coach or trade the player, and it's like, okay, for who? Like, who do you want to come back in? And it's usually either some, you know, ridiculously, you know, unrealistic name, or it's just, I don't know, just not this guy. And that, you know, to me is, okay, I get it, right? That's part of the fandom. And, you know, or, you know, they fire back at guys like me with, I don't know, you tell me. That's your job to do. And I'm not the one, you know, campaigning for, you know, player to be traded or the guy to be fired. So, you know, it's in a spot now where I think a lot of people would have liked Nick Nurse to maybe get a look. I think, you know, Celtics fan have seen his teams give the Celtics trouble over the last 5 years and, you know, that, but now he's off the board. So the reality is, had they lost in four and gotten swept, and if it was an embarrassing game four, like it was an embarrassing game three, I think you might have seen more momentum to say, all right, this fell apart in the worst possible way. We got to move on. But the fact that Joe Mazzulla got them to fight back, they did get it to a game seven. They laid an egg in game seven. But I think a lot of people in charge are going to look at it and say, man, Tatum got hurt 26 seconds into the game, and you know the Heat made everything, and we couldn't buy one. I think they're going to move into, all right, we extended this guy for a reason. When we made him the full-time head coach midseason, we're not moving on right now. They're just not going to pay somebody to not coach the team.
Keith Smith, I like that you brought up Nick Nurse. What did you make of the Sixers hire? Because I kind of view it, I like the hire, but this team, in terms of their roster construction, still has a lot of work to do.
Yeah, and that's kind of where I'm at. You know, I think, you know, people went too crazy with the whole, I don't know, Nick Nurse likes small lineups where everybody can switch. I mean, he did when he didn't have a center. But when he had a center and Marc Gasol, they won a championship and they didn't play switch everything defense. So I think, you know, that we're not going to lock him into one style and say that's how he plays and that's it. I think for the most part, it's no, he's got some versatility to what he'll do. And, you know, I'm fairly certain he's a good enough coach to figure out how to use Joel Embiid's talents without saying, no, go get me a 6'9" guy who can play, you know, three different positions instead of the MVP of the league. But with that said, I mean, he doesn't like guys who don't defend, don't bring effort on that end. I don't know that James Harden is a perfect fit for this roster. So that's going to be something that's going to have to get figured out. And, yeah, there are a couple other players that they're going to have to, you know, sort through and figure out how to build the best roster for him, because now you've kind of made that long-term commitment. It's likely, you know, very likely a four-year deal. That's generally how these deals go. So for at least the next 4 years, you're kind of saying, all right, we got to give him something he can win with.
If you had to guess right now, does James Harden end up going back to Houston with the Rockets?
I think so. And that's not any kind of reporting I'm giving you, just reading the tea leaves and reading all the other reports. Whenever something pops up, you know, mid-season, like this did, it was right around Christmas, around the holiday time, when we started first hearing this buzz, and then it doesn't go away. And it only gets louder and louder and louder, and nobody shuts it down with a, hey, this is not how this is going to go. That, to me, says there's at least something there. And I think James Harden at this point, I think he is the kind of guy who is, you know what, I want to be where I'm going to be happy. I was happiest in Houston. I'm content to just stay there, and that's where I would like to be.
I'm going to ask you a question I know the answer to. I know the answer is Tillman Fertitta. So instead of just asking you, why do the Rockets even want him back? Why does Tillman Fertitta, though, want him back? That's the one that I can't wrap my head around still.
I think they're just impatient now. I think they're looking at it as, hey, we've had a couple really bad years, and I want to win. And I don't want to be doing this rebuilding thing forever. I mean, they moved on from Steven Silas. I'm not going to say that was the worst decision in the world. The team wasn't really making a lot of progress under him. But they're really only two full years into this rebuild. Because that first year, the intention wasn't to be a bad team. They still had James Harden. They still had some other guys. And then when they traded him, they leaned into it over the last 2 years. But now you're sitting there with a roster that's full of really good, fun, interesting young talent that I think can grow. And I think Ime Udoka is going to do a really good job with that team and getting them ready to play. But I think the Rockets are, you know, up top are, yeah, you know, that all sounds well and good, but I don't want to wait another 2 years before we're competing for playoff spots. I want to compete now, and I think the belief is, you know, get James Harden in, get the right kind of guys around him, because you'll probably trade a handful of those kids in other moves to create, you know, build out your roster around James Harden. I think their feeling is, let's go forward with that. We'll be competitive for playoff spots. Long term, you're probably going to get 2-3 pretty good years out of that. And then I don't know where it goes from there. So it's not a move I would make, but my guess is that's why we're sitting where we're sitting.
We talked about Keith Smith, the speculation in regards to James Harden. There's also been a ton of speculation that Bob Myers is going to step away. We found that out to be true yesterday. How'd you react to it, and why do you think the truth is that Bob Myers is leaving the Warriors?
I think the truth is he just wants a break. I'm going to take him at his word on that. There's a lot of reporting around that in the days leading up to it. Mark Stein, I think, has been on this for a little while, of Myers is just kind of worn out. And I think, you know, one of the things that people forget is, you know, when your team, most of the years that he's been there has been, other than a couple years when they kind of took their gap years, if you will, that they were competing late into the season. So you're dealing with that. You're also dealing with, all right, this is not the easiest roster to build out. You're starting from a great point, but you got to get depth. So there you got to, you're really kind of working through that process with those guys. Not a lot of trades to be made, those kind of things. So you're kind of stuck in a spot where it's, all right, you know, it's a hard place to, you know, go. Now you start from a great core with Curry and Thompson and Green and Wiggins in that group. But my guess is he's just worn down from the challenges of this job and doing it for, you know, nearly a decade. And I'm guessing he's, you know, I'm going to take some time off, and then we'll see in a year or so, you know, what kind of materializes from there.
When you get ready for the first game next season, I'll get to the finals in just a second, Keith Smith. But when you get ready for the first game next season, do you think Dame is still with the Portland Trail Blazers?
Yeah, I think so. I think they're going to give it at least one more run of let's try to rebuild around him. I would not be surprised if they either don't make the pick at three or if they're making that pick for somebody else. I think there's a chance they're going to try to cash in on that and get a player in there that they really feel can fit around Damian Lillard and really try to lift them up. I think some teams in the Western Conference are looking at it and saying, hey, the Lakers made a run with a good but flawed roster to the Western Conference Finals. I think they're even looking at the Nuggets and saying, hey, this Nuggets team is good and really good, but they're not, you know, the Warriors. They're not, you know, feel inevitable at the start of each year that we're all playing for second. So why not us? And I think, you know, if you're Portland, you're thinking, all right, we got Damian Lillard, we've got some other nice players. Let's really try to cash in, get at least one, maybe two more guys, fill out our depth a little bit, and that can be us next year, making that deep playoff run. And I think they're going to give it one more shot around Dame.
I respect Dame's loyalty because that organization has been a dumpster fire. But if I was him, Keith Smith, I'd be trying everything in my power to wind up with Miami next year.
Yeah, I don't know how the Heat would even remotely begin to make that happen. They don't have the assets to pull that off. You know, that's I think, the challenge, right? I've seen people throw that out there and that speculation. I mean, you hear the same thing with, you know, the Lakers got to go get them. You know, why don't they make it happen? Well, we all forget Portland's on the other side. They're not just going to be like, well, hey, anybody take Damian Lillard off our hands and we'll take your, back a bunch of pieces. Superstar trades don't return the value that people tend to think they're going to. It's pretty rare that you get back the monster package. It does happen occasionally. Danny Ainge has done quite well with it several times, both with the Celtics and the Jazz now. But for the most part, you get a little bit of a disappointing package. But you look at teams like Miami, the Lakers, the teams that would really maybe be going in on Damian Lillard, you start to find it kind of hard to find, all right, what are they sending back that would be enough for the Blazers to feel really good about making that trade? And it's just not there.
You've covered the NBA for a long time. What do you think the biggest storyline is entering these NBA finals that start tomorrow night?
I think it's going to be the Miami Heat's defense against the Nuggets offense, and especially how do they handle Nikola Jokic. Bam Adebayo is a wonderful player, but he struggled with Jokic over the years. Fairly small sample size. They only play a couple times a season, but we're going to get a real good sense of, you know, where is Bam at, you know, one-on-one. And they don't have a whole lot to throw at Jokic otherwise. I think, though, if I had any one coach that I needed to say, hey, we're going to have a whole bunch of different stuff planned, it would be Eric Spoelstra. And if I had any one group of players that I think could morph from defense to defense to defense, it would be this Miami Heat team. They're really good at just switching in. And I think Spoelstra is going to have, you know, plan A, B, C, D, E, and F ready to go. And it's going to be, all right, you know, we're going to do this for a little while. Because the one thing you can't do with Jokic, you can't just show him the same look over and over and over again, because he's going to figure it out, and then he's going to just pick you apart. And that's going to be the interesting chess match there of, you know, how do they defend that team? Can they get it slowed down enough where these games can be kind of rock fights? Because unless the Heat really believe all of a sudden they're the greatest shooting team in the history of the NBA, they need to get these games played a little slower and a little a lower scoring to have a real chance here.
I've been back and forth, Denver in five or Denver in six. The only reason why I haven't been adamant on Denver in five is I feel like that's a little disrespectful to Miami, just with the things that you pointed out, which Eric Spoelstra could do. What's the official prediction for Keith Smith on the finals?
Yeah, I'm going Denver in seven. There's a couple reasons for that. One is, these are the chance at the last seven meaningful NBA games for a few months, and I want as many of them as I can get, right? So I get a little melancholy at this time of year because it's, man, all the good stuff's going away for a little bit with the NBA. So I want as many as I can get. But also, you know, I look back. Miami was supposed to lose in four or five to the Bucks. They won. They're supposed to lose in six or seven to the Knicks. They won. They're supposed to lose in four or five to the Celtics, and they won. I don't think they're going to win again, but I think they really are going to make Denver work for it, and at the end, I think the Nuggets will pull it out. But you know, I'm going Nuggets in seven.
By the way, just two more things before we let you run. We're on a bunch of stations right now in the state of Wisconsin. What did you make of the Adrian Griffin hire for the Bucks?
If it makes Giannis happy, then it makes me happy. If I'm a Bucks fan, you know, he seemed to be engaged in that process, and that's huge, right? And I think Adrian Griffin is one of those guys who he's been waiting for this spot for a while. He's been, you know, kind of, you know, on that path of, you know, we see this with assistants. They interview for years and years and years, and then they finally get their shot, and some of them do quite well. So I think it was a good pickup.
And who do you think ends up getting the Suns job?
Yeah, it was a little tougher. I think it's probably going to be Kevin Young, who's one of their assistants. Seems like he has a lot of momentum there. But, you know, the fact that Frank Vogel is a guy who has built really good teams when he has a defensive big to build around, I think they're looking at him saying, hey, maybe he can get, you know, the most out of DeAndre Ayton by making him a defender, rebounder. We've got the offense to figure it out and go. I think he's in the mix. And then Doc Rivers, just, you know, he's the kind of, those are the kind of teams that he generally tends to do pretty well with. Hand him a veteran team that's ready to win, and he can do pretty good. The question I wonder is, you know, is Chris Paul ready to do that again? You know, another run with Doc. But they have had, you know, a good amount of success together with the Clippers, so we'll see, but I think it's going to probably be Kevin Young.
My biggest concern about Doc Rivers is, you look at the last two jobs, there was a lot of things said, you know, reportedly with Kawhi and then also Paul George about trying to keep them accountable while he was there, and then you heard similar things with James Harden. I wonder, when you have a star like Durant, if Durant and Doc Rivers could get on the same page.
Yeah, we'd find out real quick, I think. You know, I think they'd probably be a pretty good mutual respect there to start off with. But Doc's a little old school, where it is, you know, hey, you're going to listen. And I think sometimes the players now are, it's a players' league. Like you, the days of the coach being the most important person in the organization, those are pretty far gone now. You know, and I think there's a good chance that they would butt heads.
Make sure you check out the Front Office Show, also Celtics blog as well. He's Keith Smith. Keith, really appreciate the insight.
I appreciate it. Thank you for having me.
There you go. Keith Smith joining us on the Zach Gilb Show on CBS Sports Radio. We will take a timeout, react to a lot of things that were just said right there when we come on back in 5 minutes. Haven't heard this song in a while. Paper Planes. This is actually, I used to hear this song every day, freshman year of high school, when I was on the football team, and we'd have two-a-days. They would play this song right when you walked in the locker room. This was the big song when I was in high school, freshman in high school. And then when you come back for the second practice, right away. And this song must have been on loop, because I feel like the only thing I remember from two-a-days, outside of me drinking a ton of Gatorade, puking, and running an absurd amount for an offensive lineman, was this song, Paper Planes.
I mean, the way I think of this song is completely different from yours.
What were you, a party animal?
No. One of my favorite movies ever, Slumdog Millionaire.
Oh, yeah.
It wasn't that. So, yeah, it just takes me back to that movie.
There's Alex. He was like sitting there, oh, Zach's going to talk about this song, Slumdog Millionaire. We're gonna have a connection here. Share some moment. Oh, no. I just remember getting destroyed.
An O-lineman.
Absolutely destroyed in two-a-days. And this would be the soundtrack for the summer, where it'd be in the morning, you would hear this song, and then chaos would ensue on the football field, and then you'd come back after getting your ass kicked, you play that song, and then more chaos would ensue on a football field. I'm telling you, I think high school football practices, two-a-days, I don't even know if they're still allowed to do those anymore, but high school two-a-days is tougher than any NFL training camp or OTA right now. I've been to OTAs in the NFL. They're the most monotonous things ever. You're just standing around, stretching. You don't even have pads on. It's shorts and a t-shirt. You do like a few plays, things like that. Like, obviously, it takes a lot more skill what those guys are doing than what we were doing. But high school two-a-days, oh my goodness gracious. They would run you into. We had a coach. I'll never forget this SOB. I won't say his name on the radio. Even when we would win, the next practice, so the games usually be on a Friday or a Saturday in high school. That Monday practice, you could win every point you would allow, 110-yard sprint. Like, you win a game 35-34, they would line you up to do 34 110-yard sprints. For every point, not every score, every point. And yeah, they would take a few off here or there because I'd be dead if I had to do 34 110-yard sprints. And sometimes they make you do other things as well, which would be 110 yards across the football field, whether it's wheelbarrow or crab walk, things like that. But just so stupid. I understand a little discipline. I understand teaching things here and there. But that is just flat out absurd. I would have a lawsuit these days.
Yeah, too much.
Just too much. It made me honestly hate football. It made, in terms of playing the game, the high school football culture sometimes is just ridiculous. A little bit too much. 855-212-4CBS, 855-212-4227. Todd in Tampa has been waiting for a while. Let's go to Todd. Todd, what's happening?
Jack, let's get down to business. I want to go around the horn and have you comment, and I'll close. But I want to say this. But before we were talking Tyler Boyd, we were talking NFL. I want to jump to the NBA level. But Tyler Boyd's a bad boy for them. Don't forget about Von Miller for the Buffalo Bills. I want to know if Aaron Rodgers going to the Jets can make some noise and get in the playoffs and do anything. I don't think so, but I'm pulling for him, okay? Of course, I'm Buccaneers down here in Tampa Bay, and I'm
well, your totally season's over before it even started, Todd.
Right. I don't even want. I'm praying we're throwing $100 million to Tom Brady and saying, come on back. But I'm
not
smoking something. Yeah, exactly. But so anyway, we'll go from there. I want to say this about Jimmy Butler. I'm pulling for Miami, but and Jokovic, you may have won the MVP twice, but if you don't close this deal, you ain't the MVP. Okay? Whoever closes this and wins this title, because in America, Giannis. Okay, this is for you. It matters if you win a championship, okay? Not if you come in second, not if you had a good season, okay? Can you?
Well, Todd, you've had a lot of American players as well that didn't own failures, so I don't really love that comment, to be fair. Giannis is a heck of a player, but don't get me wrong. He had a bad moment. He should have never said after the game that this season wasn't a failure. Some people in America, as Todd would say, love the answer. Personally, I did not. I think you'd take ownership of that moment. I'm not saying we expect you to win a championship each and every year, but when you lose in the first round, yeah, that's not a good look, especially when you are the number one overall seed. Let's go to Steve in Lincoln, Nebraska, where I actually may be going this year for a Cornhuskers football game. He's next up on CBS Sports Radio. Steve, what do you got?
Hey, entertaining show. As far as NBA, I subscribe to ABC, anybody but Celtics. I'm a Knicks fan for 40 years.
So yeah. You're happy. You were enjoying that because they were down 3-0. They get it to 3-3. And then everyone in America, including yours truly, is thinking, all righty, game 7's going to go to Boston. And then to lose is one thing, but to not even show up is a completely different thing.
Ditto. Hey, I got to. I'm going to zigzag here a little bit. I just want to bitch about a couple of things that sportscasters do that bug me. The one is the way they mispronounce versus. When you're talking about, you know, Celtics versus Heat or whatever, it's Celtics versus Heat. And it's like they invent a word. There's no singular for versus. I realize it's just shortening words like velo and like vacay, and I'm guessing, but, you know, no biggie. But the other thing does bother me. How can you score a basketball?
All right, Steve. Dexter, do you want to handle that one or do you want me to handle that one? Because I think we had the same thought here.
Nope. It was interesting, though. And I do not mean that in a good way.
No. I don't get what some people call up to complain about.
Do you feel like he was trolling you there? Is that what we would call that?
No, I don't think so. I think he was actually thinking that he was in the right there. The scoring the basket doesn't even make sense to me.
It does not. That scares me.
But it is versus.
It is versus. He's not wrong about that.
Now, don't get me wrong. For a while, I used to say verse. That used to be me.
Oh, was he calling you out?
I don't think so, because that was like years ago. Now I say versus.
Right.
So I don't even get the point of that phone call. Lose the number. Let's go to Zach in Charlotte. Zach, go ahead.
Hey, Zach. So I think Nick Nurse is just going to be fantastic in Philadelphia because just what he did with the Raptors. And, you know, I think James Harden's going to leave. So, and you saw how good he was, even though he didn't have Kawhi for that one season, or two seasons. So, yeah, I think he's a great fit. He coached the Raptors to a championship, and I just think he'll be a great fit in Philly. The only question is, will they get over the hump? They just keep losing in the playoffs.
Well, Zach's been calling this show for a while, and I always do appreciate Zach. I think Zach's like 15 years old, and he's actually one of my favorite calls, much better than that other guy from Lincoln, Nebraska, or even Todd from Tampa as well. So out of the three calls that we just took there, Zach is at the top of the list. Here's my thing with Nick Nurse. Nick Nurse is a really good coach. We could all admit that. No crap. But you could like the hire of Nick Nurse in Philadelphia, and you could feel good about the hire and also acknowledge the Sixers didn't get any better on the court. Like, Nick Nurse is a better coach in the year of 2023 than Doc Rivers. But I don't think it matters who the coach is if your goal is to win the championship, if James Harden's your closer. And if James Harden isn't back in Philadelphia, who are you bringing in to replace him? You know, Fred VanVleet's already being talked about as potentially going on in there to Philadelphia because Nick Nurse is there. But is VanVleet a closer on a championship team? No, I know he was phenomenal when Kawhi won that championship. But Embiid needs a closer. Like, you look at the construction of the Nuggets compared to the Sixers. The first piece is similar. Joel Embiid and Nikola Jokic. Now, Joker is better. But in order to win a championship, both of them needed a closer. Jamal Murray is that closer. Jamal Murray is everything the Sixers wish that they had, because if they had Jamal Murray, they would have a guy that you could consistently, when healthy, rely on to hit that big shot. So Philly's in a tough spot. And I think Daryl Morey is one of the more overrated executives there is. I was so out on that guy the moment he was celebrating losing to the Golden State Warriors, because my losing was better than your losing to the rest of the league, which had embarrassed. We were 5-8, but everyone else was like 5-34. I hate that tweet from Daryl Morey. And I don't get why Morey, who saw Harden in Houston, who did really good things, thought that he was going to be the closer, because James Harden doesn't close big games. I get it. Game one, he's phenomenal. Game four, he was awesome. But after that, the dude completely checked out, and I'm not letting Embiid off the hook. I think this is the first time Embiid is properly getting some criticism in his career. But bringing in Nick Nurse, yes, they got better from a coaching standpoint. But the roster is still the biggest problem in Philadelphia, where I don't think it really matters who the coach is. If you're going to bring back James Harden, they're going to be out in the second round again. If you're going to go somewhere else, who's the guy out there? Everyone will tell me Dame. Who are you giving up to go get them? You giving up Maxie right now? This may not make sense what I'm about to say, but I'm going to say it anyway. The Sixers need Tyrese Maxie this summer, in my opinion, who I think is really good. They need him to be 25. The problem is he's 22. And when you're 22, not everyone can come in the league and just be a dominant stud from start to finish. And you've seen that. There's times Tyrese Maxey goes, puts 30 points on the board, and he looks like an absolute stud. But then there's other games where it's like, you don't really see that. That, to me, is what I just think with more seasoning, Tyrese Maxey will be really damn good. The problem is when that happens, where's Embiid's prime going to be? Like, I don't know about you, Dexter. I think Embiid has a championship window of 2 to 3 more seasons in Philadelphia.
I don't think you're wrong on that unless that gets extended to where he's paired with the right younger star.
Yeah.
But you make a good point. You need somebody that's probably about 24, 25, probably just about to hit their prime. Like someone like a Shai Gilgeous-Alexander.
Yeah.
If you had him with Embiid right now, you feel like you're cooking.
If you had Jimmy Butler.
What? Well, funny you mentioned that.
Yeah.
They had Jimmy Butler.
And I think a lot of it now is revisionist history. Because at the time, that organization did everything for Ben Simmons. I don't think everyone realized how great Jimmy Butler was then.
I did.
Because he wasn't allowed to be an alpha anywhere. Right. And Miami embraced him being an alpha. But it's very easy to say and very correct to say now, Jimmy Butler would be the perfect complimentary piece for Joel Embiid.
Yeah.
And that's what I wonder. When does Embiid start to say, all right, I'm done with this?
Well, I remember you telling me this in the beginning of the playoffs. We were talking about this, and you were saying that, look, some of the heat's going to start to come in Embiid if he didn't deliver in the playoffs. And then you saw how he didn't deliver in the big games when it counted against the Celtics, game 6 and 7. And that time is now, but you also bring up another good point, which is when is he going to maybe start thinking about, I want to leave Philly? But he's been loyal to Philly. He loves Philly.
I think a year from now is when that potentially happens. I think he'll be on board. Nick Nurse, one more year, comes on in. And I think a year from now, if things don't drastically change, then that's when the public narrative will start to go to Embiid. Because for years, deservedly so, it was on Ben Simmons. And then it was on all the crappy GMs that they brought in. Brian Colangelo with his wife creating all those burner accounts that he may have created. Who knows? Then you kind of looked, okay, last year it was like on James Harden, right? And James Harden just got there. You're running out of places to run and point the finger at somebody else. And you look at Embiid, as much as I don't believe in James Harden, at least he gave you games 1 and 4. I know you guys playing on one leg, Embiid, but he did nothing in that fourth quarter in game 6 and then no-showed in game 7, and I'll do this correctly.
Mm-hmm.
Versus the Boston Celtics, he no-showed.
Well played. You did not disappoint the previous caller, 2 callers ago.
He didn't make any baskets as well. One more before the break. Let's go to Dale in Alabama. Dale, what's happening?
Hey, what's going on? How you doing?
Doing great, Dale. What do you got?
I was just listening to you guys. Philly need to try to get Damian Lillard. I think that would be a perfect fit.
Yeah, so the Sixers, that's been talked about for a while. The question is just, how do you go get him? You'd have to give up Tyrese Maxey. I don't know if Daryl Morey would be willing to do that. And also, until Dame gets on out of there, we've been talking about Dame leaving there for 4 years. So how much of this is actually on Dame having the guts to say, I'm done with Portland? I lied. One more. Troy in Buffalo. Troy, go ahead.
You're talking about high school and doing gassers for losing in points.
Yes.
I recall when I got detention one time, I had to do suicides. My number times 3 just for getting a detention once. So I can relate to your getting beat by a couple points and then having to do a bunch of running. So just brought me back to like the old high school days for sports.
Yeah. Every coach thinks that they're the Herb Brooks of high school sports. That's what I realized when I played high school. I'm sure there's a lot of good coaches too, but that my high school football coach was like Herb Brooks with that whistle. Again, 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 again. Except no one was like Mike Ruzioni that screamed out, Mike Ruzioni, who do you play for? United States of America. And Ruzioni once said that was Hollywood up big time, which ruined one of my favorite movie scenes of all time. We really needed the trainer to say, Herb, this is not safe. This is not good anymore. All right, we'll come on back. I think Shep is going to join us in studio. I got to get some wacky basketball takes out of him. All right, that was the quickest closing bell ever because we're actually going to scrap it today because Shep is roaming around the studios getting ready for the JR Sport Brief extravaganza, which, of course, he does produce, coming your way on many of the same CBS Sports Radio affiliates, Sirius XM, Channel 158, and that free Odyssey app in about 10 minutes or so. And Shep is also now becoming a big deal at SiriusXM NBA Radio. So I wanted to ask Shep two questions in the NBA world, and we're going to see how many times you're going to have to cut Shep off, because sometimes you will just give an NBA question to Shep, and then, like, after 2 minutes of the most comprehensive analysis you'll ever get, he'll go, this is why LeBron James can't be the greatest player of all time. And then I will just want to slam my head into the microphone because everyone will be calling me up at 855-212-4CBS to give me their opinion on why LeBron's the GOAT or Michael Jordan is the GOAT. And that's a conversation that personally I don't care for. So if we get to that point, Shep, where you start going into LeBron and Michael and all that, I think I'm going to throw something at you.
That's a fair point. I mean, people have thrown things at people all the time here. This won't be a Scottie Pippen, Michael Jordan kind of adversary relationship
I
promise you.
And we all know why Scottie Pippen, who has been very annoyed at Michael for many years, but when your ex-wife is dating the guy that you are most well-known with, is a son.
And 16 years her junior, by the way. That's not something we see all that often in the popular hemisphere of that is the NBA royalty. Because Marcus Jordan, by default, I know you didn't ask this, but by default, he's royalty. You're Michael Jordan's kid. And you're dating someone that, there's some hidden agendas if you ask
me. Well, nothing surprises me anymore when we find out that Al Pacino, who's 82, his girlfriend is getting ready to pop out a kid, and Robert De Niro just had a kid going back in May, and he's like 79. So nothing really surprises me.
Well, 79, I guess, is the new 40, and 83 is the new 50, apparently.
Yeah.
And by the way, since we're bringing that up, that's just not fair to the kid.
Well, I was saying earlier, so Pacino's 82. If he lives for another 10 years, how much is that kid going to really be able to remember his dad?
Well, this has nothing to do with the NBA Finals, but listen, Al Pacino has already exceeded the average male American population in terms of life expectancy.
Yeah.
Like,
I hope he lives to 100 at this sake.
I mean, Mike, he better.
Kid gets, like, what, by that 18 point, years of dad?
By that point, the kid's going to be at a senior year graduation of high school.
All righty. Let me ask you this. Who wins the NBA Finals? That's the first NBA question that I want to give you.
It's going to be the Denver Nuggets.
Agreed.
Because you were talking—
How many games?
It's going to be Denver. So remember, they don't do the 2-3-2 like they used to.
Yeah, it's been a few years.
Right, obviously. So because of that, it is going to be the Nuggets in 5.
See, I'm stuck between Denver in 5 or Denver in 6.
Right.
And the only reason I'm thinking Denver in 6 is just because of how much respect I have for the Miami Heat and how they battle. But
question for you.
I look at the entirety of the Denver Nuggets team. Mm-hmm. Jokic is the best player in this series, and Jamal Murray is just a lethal closer.
Will there ever be a fourth quarter? And we saw this from Tatum in the first two games. Now, first three games, but I won't hold the game three against him because he wasn't in the fourth quarter. Mm-hmm. But are you ever going to see a scenario in the NBA Finals play out where Jamal Murray goes scoreless in a fourth quarter? Because I remember Jamal Murray going for 23 points in a fourth quarter in this playoffs.
No.
Right.
Absolutely not.
It's never going to happen. And Gelb, that's obviously, far and away, their second best player. Nikola Jokic, there is no answer for him.
He's the most consistent player in the league.
I mean, Anthony Davis is the best two-way player we have in the NBA, arguably. He had no answer for Nikola Jokic. None.
Yeah, when he plays Anthony Davis.
When Anthony Davis, when he's at his apex, he could still not stay in front of Jokic because Jokic shoots the three like a guard. And when you take that away from him, Jokic has shown the ability to put the ball on the floor. Now, granted, it's not as fast and athletic and explosive.
Doesn't matter. No one can stop
it. Doesn't matter. You can't stay in front of him. Now, you double him. There's nobody in the history of the sport that's ever found an open guy better than him.
Jokic is a cheat code. Like, he's a video game player that sometimes he can move very slow.
Yeah.
But he has all these buttons around him where there's no way to stop him. He's absurd. So I'm stuck between 5 or 6. I want to go 5, but part of me, because of the respect I have for Miami, goes 6. Here's the other question I have for you.
Yes.
Jaylen Brown,
mm-hmm.
Is he on the Celtics next year?
Yes, because...
So you've come around on that.
Well, the reality is you have to look at the Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown situation. First of all, the hand has been bothering Jaylen Brown all his playoff run.
Yeah.
Even
when the hand was good, he can't go left.
But we can't. That's fair, and God knows 8 turnovers will certainly dictate that. But what we can't gloss over... was when he was healthy, he showed up against the Golden State Warriors. It was Jason Tatum that disappeared. I think a lot of people forget that. Now,
Jason Tatum doesn't go down with that ankle injury. Obviously, he tried to gut his way and play his way through.
Brown needed to elevate in that spot. He didn't.
That's fine. Did Jimmy Butler elevate in game 5 or game 6? Stars have off nights.
Yeah.
Jaylen Brown is an all-NBA second-team player that is still in his mid-20s.
But there's talks that he wants to be the number one, and that was his moment to show that he could be the number one.
You know what?
I'm not saying in Boston, because Tatum's the number one in Boston, but that was his moment there, and he failed.
Gub, the question should be, what do the Celtics do to maximize Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown instead of, and I'm not saying it's,
I'll give you the answer. They're going to give Jaylen Brown a fat paycheck, five years, $290.3 million compared to $184.5 that another team could give him. There's your answer why Jaylen Brown's going to be bad.
Listen, I know you have your opinions.
You got 40 seconds,
okay,
go ahead.
Fair enough. I know you have your opinions about Doc Rivers. We know he got the boot. We know Monty Williams got the boot. Mike Budenholzer, obviously Nick Nurse. Those are four high quality coaches. I understand it's his first year. You just got to cut loose with a 34-year-old. He has no business being head coach in the NBA right now.
He'll be, who are you then bringing in?
I'm telling you something right now. You bring in the guy that used to coach them 12 years ago. I know you may not like that.
No. 12 years ago? Okay, I'd be good. 7 years ago, I'd be good.
He's great with superstars, and thank you for having me, man.
I don't think he's great with superstars. Kawhi, Paul George, and James Harden would say a whole lot of other things. I wish we had more time with Shep, but I wanted to kind of go quickly with Shep because then the next thing you know, he'd be talking LeBron and Mike. We'll talk to you tomorrow, everybody. We out. Bye-bye. Peace.